To the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the future. It is Friday, 7:01 a.m. local New Zealand time. Thank goodness for that. Good morning to my co-host Will, who I've suddenly just decided to lavish with praise, as the state may have it. Happens to be one of the most downbeat truth as I know. Actually, researchers, unlike me.
Downbeat, and, is that the opposite of upbeat?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
All right, every upbeat needs a downbeat, bro, in order to make the musical number work. That's what I'm talking about, man.
The most downbeat person in the Southern Hemisphere.
But downbeat sounds cool, doesn't it?
Sadly enough, yeah.
Yeah, see, there you go. Accept it. You've been branded. It's the Downbeat Vinnie and Will Show. And interesting developments. This Friday is an auspicious occasion. It's the aftermath of legislation being passed which will stop all film crews that are working on this $700 million project, The Hobbit, from actually having any employee status, which means they get annual leave, and we have this extra thing where you have a KiwiSaver, where the employer has to pay you a little extra into a savings account controlled by the government to make sure that you can buy your first home.
How nice of them.
Or at least that's the rhetoric. And ironically enough, of course, all that money that you're giving away is given to finance companies, 18 of which in the last couple of years have collapsed. Anyway, besides the point, they can also not contest any unjustified dismissal. And it always happens, and I believe this has already happened in the United States, where they'll try and decrease your rights in the workplace. And inevitably, as your rights decrease, so do your wages. Until eventually, the only people who are working are monkeys, and the only thing you get out of it is peanuts. It's going to drive all the talent out of this country's film industry, and it's pretty sad, really. But oh well, as long as the Prime Minister John Key, Mr. Merrill Lynch, Federal Reserve derivative monger, is happy with it and made the deal himself, probably sketched it on a bathroom napkin. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, and we'll be right back.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah. It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh, it's... yeah. That's right. We go brush our teeth. That's
all. Oh, it's business time. Tea consumption slows cognitive decline in other adults. This is from Natural News. Oh, older adults, actually, who drink tea regularly experience significantly less cognitive decline than adults of the same age who do not drink tea, according to a study conducted by researchers from the University of California, Los Angeles, and the University of Washington, and represented at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference on Alzheimer's Disease 2010. I wonder if tea happens to get mercury out of your brain or something.
The opposite or out of because contention. Tea, green tea in particular, has very high fluoride. Up to between 50 and 125 parts per million, in fact.
Well, that's 50, 150 times as much as it takes to dumb down a population. I guess they probably did it like that just to, like, skulk all the new ages. But is it, by chance, is it artificial fluoride or naturally occurring fluoride? Because there's two different types.
Yeah, well, as far as I know, it's just naturally occurring fluoride, but
Is the naturally occurring fluoride as difficult for your body to process as the other one? Because we're talking about, well, it's basically the second most poisonous known to man, slotting in between cyanide as the number one most poisonous and arsenic is the number three. They put the second.
Well, I'd say it's about number three because you've got uranium and its derivatives, isotopes. Be number one.
Well, that die of radiation poisoning, of course, but the
of non isotopes, yeah. You know, it's a hard one because what you've got naturally occurring fluoride is normally calcium fluoride from limestone rocks and whatnot, water runoff. And CaF is nothing like NaF, which is sodium fluoride, derivative from the mining industry, the aluminium smelter industry. And so, yeah, that's one distinction there that people fail to recognize, and they go, fluoride is fluoride. Fail to recognize the compound that it's in. But green tea, apparently the plant leaches fluoride through its roots. Fixes fluoride, sorry, through its roots. And that's why there's apparently a high content of fluoride in the leaves. Of green tea in particular.
Very strange. Well, the conspiracy theorist in me says, maybe they put it in the green tea to do it all to the Chinese, and everyone else just gets it as a happy byproduct. But never mind.
Well, the biggest symptom of fluoride that is measurable is hypothyroidism, because the thyroid gland is affected by the endocrine system and the levels of iodine, and fluoride actively fixes iodine in the human body and enables it to pass through the urine system. And so there's a direct link there, and then they've gone and so many women in particular are diagnosed with this hyper thyroidism and where their thyroid gland doesn't function properly, and that regulates, you know, hormones quite highly in older women and things like this. So there's major problems there, and the establishment love just throwing out Monsanto, throwing out all sorts of pharmaceutical drugs to treat those so-called side effects of thyrosis, hyperthyroidism. So it's just another problem, reaction, solution, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in recent years, a body of scientific evidence has shown that tea drinking may have an important role in health and wellness, says Douglas Ballantyne of the Lipton Institute of Tea, which funded the study. Oh, of course. Isn't that interesting, though? You know, the tea industry funds a study that says that the tea industry is good as a result. Anybody a little bit suspicious? This new study provides further support that regular tea drinking may be an important and actionable change a consumer can make of a part of a healthy lifestyle. The researchers followed more than 4,800 US residents over the age of 64 for up to 14 years, regularly assessing tea consumption and coffee consumption using food frequency questionnaires and assessing cognitive performance with the mini mental state examination. After adjusting for potential confounding factors such as age, education, medical history, and smoking status, the researchers have found that tea drinking was associated with 17 to 37% less cognitive decline over time. Compared with participants who never drank tea, those who drank tea only 5 to 10 times per year experienced 17% less cognitive decline. Cognitive decline was 26% lower in those who drank tea 5 or more times per week, 32% lower in those who drank it 1 to 3 times per month, and 37% lower in those who drank it 1 to 4 times per week. Coffee consumption, in contrast, had no effect on cognitive decline, except among those who drank it 5 or more times per week. In this group, cognitive decline was decreased by 20%.
Sounds the opposite of what it should be. I mean, this study sounds like one of those disinfo ones that claim mercury is totally safe. You heard those ones that mercury is good for you and stuff? in the form of vaccines? Absolutely insane. But you see, the problem is here, and I've seen people argue over the net and that, and they go, oh, you conspiracy theorists talk about fluoride. It's only 1 part per million in most of the West. You know, it's 5 parts per million in India because apparently they can get away with more there. And they're probably right. Social engineers worked that, worked out how far they can push those people. But the sad reality is, most people through water take in about 2 or 3 milligrams of fluoride per day, which is supposed to be very safe. People say, well, how would you ever get to dangerous levels above 10 parts per million? How would that ever happen? They don't realize that things like cereals, processed foods, use municipal water, fluoridated water, in most major cities. Take, for instance, the cereal brands and companies that operate out of central Auckland and south Auckland that then produce most of the packaged goods for the entire North Island, if not the whole country. And the same in the States, you know, they're not producing your food in some backwater place on tanks. They use a municipal water, and in lots of times in cereals, the fluoride content can be much higher than the municipal water used, because you know the water's it goes through a drying process or whatever, but it takes in, you know, it ends up being a higher concentration than the water used for whatever reason. And so via toothpaste and the food and then even black coffee, they're saying it's got up to 9 parts per million. Just a normal diet today in the West could result in ingesting at least, you know, easily 20 milligrams of fluoride per day. which is dangerous even according to the WHO. So this is the whole reason I disagree with, you know, all these socialists and statists, and you say, oh, the, you know, states just trying to reduce tooth decay. Why have you got a problem with that, you conspiracy nut? Well, I've got a problem with it because it's an unmeasured dose. It's an uncontrolled medication, and it's mass medication, and that's not freedom.
Well, this story was distributed through United Business Media from PR through the PR Newswire, bro. So they paid to have this. They paid to make the study. They paid to have this. This doesn't seem to be anybody else involved here. You know, it just seems like a, you know, quick open and shut case of a big lie of a study to me. You know, and they're talking about that coffee, which has 2 to 3 times the caffeine of tea, had virtually no effect on cognitive decrease. I mean, it's just silly to me. You know, these coffee for caffeine, for example, kills about 10,000 people annually in the US. You know, heart palpitations and such. People just drinking so much caffeine and overdosing on it. Let alone all the poison that they all ingest daily that prevents them from absorbing any nutrients. You know, all the stuff that is part of our society, part of our social life, really, have turned into these kind of poison meeting sessions. Hey, man, do you want to go have a Coke? Do you want to go have a burger? Do you want to go have a cigarette? Do you want to go have a beer? You know, all poisons. All associated positively with social contact. So it becomes very, very difficult to not get poisoned if you're a social person. And the solution that a lot of people turn to is becoming a social recluse.
Because the pragmatic meanings of going out and mingling with all these, especially if you're one of these socialite pieces of trash, you know, like the ones who... ones who are like off on some fake show party tonight, the ones who, you know, could never, ever, ever see the animal being killed that, you know, they've eaten at BK today, or you know, those sorts of people, you normally find that they absolutely revel in everything that is just wrong and bad for you. You know, I'm talking from the nanotech makeups they use, to the aluminium sunscreens they use, to everything they drink, everything they eat, just totally artificial. Artificial people, artificial food. What comes first becomes a chicken and egg scenario. No, I mean, the propaganda came first.
Yeah.
And their stupid parents deciding they didn't need to breastfeed them and things like that, you know, like... It's a sad, sad world. People have been told, "Oh, we don't need to be animals anymore. We don't need to be human at all. Now we can make everything for ourselves." Oh, really? Scientists still can't make a cell, folks. They can't even make a complex protein building block of a cell.
Yeah.
The Zeitgeist Project guys, come on. You can't make a generic cell yet. Then they go and find out, modern science today has found out, oh, we start looking into the mitochondria of the cells, the energy factories of the cells, and we find other cells inside those mitochondria, and then we look in them, we find more, and then it goes below 4 microns, the rule of thumb minimum size for a biological functioning cell. And science is scratching their head going, oh, how can it possibly get that small and still be a functioning... You know, they're completely lost.
And a guy in 1923, I think, invented a microscope, and he, if you focus the beam through granite, This is what he tried. You can get far more magnification. I mean, normal electron microscopes that we've got now have about 10,000 times magnification tops. This guy invented one that had 60,000. And that's what he discovered when he was looking into cells, is all these layers and layers and layers, infinite layers of life, built one inside another.
Yeah, it's like this whole planet's within cells. It's just... It's just amazing, which, you know, lends itself to the theory that's often being represented graphically in movies, that we're just, this whole universe ends up being in some little tiny cell in another hyperdimension or something. But it's almost like that, looking into our own cells. And so what I say is, you know, we're so focused upon what we can do, and we can get into space and we can do everything here and there, but we don't know what's on the bottom of the oceans in a lot of cases. We haven't discovered all the species in a lot of our rainforests around the planet. And we certainly don't understand the human body to the extent where we should be manipulating it with the food and water and the so-called technologies we've used to save people in them. You know, the revelation from Bill Gates that if we do a really, really good job on vaccines, reproductive health services, and health services in general, then we can get the world population down 10 to 15%. Like, it's just counterintuitive for so many slaves, so many people who just think, oh, vaccines save everyone, and, you know, the new health technologies are there to save everyone. So how is doing a really, really good job result in killing about 1 billion people?
Yeah, well...
And how can someone say, I want to kill 1 billion people, wouldn't still be seen as a nice guy?
When you... Oh, what was it? It was a quote from Joseph Stalin. When you kill one, it is a tragedy. But when you kill 10 million, it is a statistic. Yeah. Some cancer industry groups finally admit that advice to avoid the sun may be causing vitamin D deficiencies. Isn't that interesting? As predicted, every silly sausage in Britain is really ill because there's stuff all sun there. And if there is sun, they're probably asleep because they were out clubbing the night before. So you can get even pastier. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, coming at you live from the future and from GorillaMedia.co.nz. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Those of you who have not heard us before, you'll probably never listen to us again. Now,
was that a Gibbon impersonation before, Vinny?
A what an impersonation?
A Gibbon. You know, one of those little monkey things?
I don't know what.
Oh, really?
I don't know what a Gibbon is, but maybe I just did a Gibbonism. Moving on. These brains more powerful than computers. This comes in October the 27th. New study set to be published in the journal The American Naturalist has discovered that bees' tiny brains are capable of performing mathematical functions far more quickly and efficiently than even today's most powerful computers. According to the study, bees are able to quickly calculate the shortest flying routes among their network of flowers and plants in order to minimize flying time, a feat that even the speediest computers take days to solve. For years, researchers have been trying to solve the traveling salesman problem, an efficiency conundrum centered around how best to route sales calls to save time and increase efficiency. But scientists from Royal Holloway University of London have found the answer in an insect brain the size of a grass seed. Foraging bees solve travelling salesman problems every day, Dr. Nigel Rain from Royal Holloway is quoted as saying in The Guardian. They visit flowers at multiple locations, and because bees use lots of energy to fly, they found a route which keeps flying to a minimum. The team set up artificial computer-operated flowers and tracked bee behavior to see how they assessed and picked their routes. Instead of simply following a flying pattern based on the order in which they found flowers, the bees actually recalculated in their brains the best overall route to take to maximize efficiency and save energy. Despite their tiny brains, bees are capable of extraordinary feats of behavior, Rain went on to say. We need to understand how they can solve the traveling salesman problem without a computer. And previous studies have found that bees have amazing memory capacities for their size. Their incredible olfactory senses are also amazingly powerful at discerning and remembering different smells and aromas. This is quite interesting, you know, there's infinite complexity to life on this planet, isn't there? And there's so many conundrums to it, so much complexity. And I find zoology to be quite an interesting subject, really, because there's so many adaptations. What I think the human race really needs to do is kind of take a lesson for that and kind of adapt, you know. In a world full of lies, you've got to actually put down a solid, you know, foundation of truth. At the very least, truth to yourself. That way, if you've believed a lie and somebody informs you about it, you can go, oh okay then. Whoops, silly me. I think that's what a lot of people really need to just realize is that, you know, hey, we were wrong. We've been lied to the whole time and we believed it. I got distracted.
See, Vinny, some people might think we're weirdos just for reading out an article on bees' brains when we're meant to be conspiracy theorists. But you see, this is the thing. This is the thing they're missing out on. This is the thing they don't understand about us, is that we're interested in real information that the mainstream scum media and all the scum followers don't want to engage in. You know, and scum like Noam Chomsky doesn't talk about, and the commies don't talk about, and, you know, real life interesting stuff. Yeah, reality. Something called reality. You know, we were discussing movies before on the break, and I kind of said, you know, even though some movies follow a predictable story plot, I like some of them well done. And Vinny said, well, that's just relativism. And you know what? He's right. Because in something that's totally fake, you have to be a relativist. So movies are false reality, ultimately. If it's not a documentary or based upon a true story, I guess it's all based on something. But it's pretty much false reality, kind of like video games, all based on something too. Pretty much false reality, if you ask me. So false reality lends itself to relativism.
Yeah.
And people who engage only in that and then end up being relativists. I saw Vinny, you had some punk come and make some smart-ass comment to you on Facebook yesterday regarding this whole topic with The Hobbit. You made the example of wages being incrementally decreased in California once the contracts were put out and the floodgates were open to some of our mates from Mexico. And he goes to you, what the F has California got to do with anything? He couldn't see that you made this rational, logical example. And so I thought to myself, because I always do, I always profile people. I'm like a real bad racist or something. I clicked on his Facebook profile to see, okay, let's see what this guy's into. Books, Richard Dawkins, The God Delusion. I'm like, oh, why am I surprised? Oh, you know, give me another, you know, like, always the same sort of scum, you know, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with reading that mindless book. I've got it here, but I'm just saying, but the problem is, you know, it's always a certain type of people, you know, and oh, what's a Billy likes Barack Obama and believes in climate change too, you know, like, why do they have to be so cliche?
Yeah. The conspiracy deniers, bro.
You know, but there's so many cliche tenets in people. Like, if I'm walking down the street and I see a white guy with dreads, you know, there's a 95% chance he's a climate changer, Barack Obama man. Why can't they just surprise us once in a while?
I know. There's not even any original climate cultist out there. In fact, I was talking with my missus the other day about this, that, you know, she wanted to be part of a community garden and stuff, but it was a real put-off because all the community gardens around this entire friggin' city are all climate cultists.
Yeah, and I agree with the community garden idea, but then you've got to put up with their UN-loving death cult garbage.
Yeah. You know, it puts me off my radishes.
I mean, there's an idea the producers just put up. Just invite that punk who criticised us onto the show, and see how long he can hold stand the fire. You know,
another hot seat with Will. Oh yes. Sounds very nice. And also, interesting development, regular listeners to the show, we will be moving to a new time slot, I believe, in a week or so's time. We'll be coming at you live from 5 to 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, which is about 12 till 2 New Zealand local time. We'll be swapping time slots with the Truther Girls, I believe. So make sure you tell all your mates and that kind of stuff about that, and stay tuned for updates at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Next week we're going to have a top five week, the top five interviews that we've had over the last 100 days. As we reorganize for the new time slot. And we're going to have some great interviews in there. We're going to have some with Rosalind Peterson talking about the golf kill-off. Very, I would say enlightening, but I'd just say it's a word that sounds, that rhymes with enlightening. Just shocking stuff. And with John Truman Wolf, the Hollywood moneylender turned author, wrote a book called Crisis by Design, discussing the financial crisis. Now, many of these international banks, the scum took us down, and many others as well. So, if you'd like to give a little bit of feedback on how you've felt with our first stint and then a new time slot, please email our producer, because he loves your feedback, and quite frankly, so do I. Don't you like that? Well, when we get the real nice feedback and people like love what we're doing and stuff like that, you know, it makes it so worth it, man. Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Of course, just send us your feedback or your honest thoughts, and yeah.
And producer at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Producer at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
Mitch Santel, great man.
Mm-hmm. One of the best. And quite often he'll call up and chat with you for hours and stuff like that. As a lot of our guests know, he's an incredibly friendly guy, and he works so very 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 hard. Always on the phone, always doing something. You
sounded like John Eisen there, Vinny.
Yeah. Well, you know, I learned something when I was young, that if you kind of want to change who you are and become better at something, then you hang around with people who are already better at it than you, and you just pick up on it. Pretty much.
Yeah. That's how we're meant to learn to do everything, right? To fend for ourselves in the world, I suppose.
Unlike these eugenics Agenda 21 cultists.
Oh, don't worry. They learn from Al Gore, though. They learn real good habits, you know. Just talking about 350 parts per million while just... You know, I've got some people up the road from me, and they don't have cars. They ride around bikes, and they... constantly writing articles about the post-carbon era, and they're constantly talking about what to do for the environment, right? But then another neighbor of mine goes up on the road yesterday and finds a dead native gecko, and it was and sees his cat at the same time, and you know, it was the climate cultist cat who went and killed the, you know, protected species just up the road, and then when you go and walk, and then when you go and walk past the climate cultist house, every weed listed by the Department of Conservation, we're talking about this ginger that grows insanely, and asparagus weed, and honeysuckle, and all sorts of stuff, classified weeds in New Zealand, which helping ruin our native forests. Every weed is around this climate changer's house. They don't do anything about it. Out the back is all this rubbish and stuff. It's just like, and they're writing articles. And at least pretend that you're making an effort. At least pretend that you're not killing everything in vision. You know, like they're just such hypocrites. Really, I see it all the time.
I think that we're all hypocrites to a certain extent, but some are worse than others.
Yeah, exactly. These people are so, like, if I was going to write letters in local paper saying people need to clean up, people need to do this, people need to do that, I'd at least take 2 hours out of my Saturday and go and rip the weeds out of my front, you know, lawn, or, you know, tidy up, or stop my cat from killing native animals, or, you know, I would at least take those measures. These people just don't care. They just don't care.
They're mindless zombies. Let's join them, and let our brains all go into mush. What do we want?
Brains.
When do we want it?
Brains.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back.
Look at me, driving, and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, I'll let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them, and I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end the planet in a holocaust, in a holocaust, in a holocaust.
Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. If you go there, you can check out our lovely blog. Keeps you up to date. And also, our basic information feed is gorillamedia.co.nz. That's gorilla with one R. Apparently, there's a difference between the spelling in New Zealand English and American English. And there's also a difference between our systems of weight and measurement. I kind of thought to myself, well, what's the difference between the imperial system and the metric system? Metric system's pretty logical, goes by tens, kind of like the Mayan calendar, apparently. And what's the imperial system? It's all like eighths of an inch and all these fractions. And it's like, why don't you just have an 8mm? It's just silly, right? Isn't it a really outdated system? Is there any logic to the system of measurement here? I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, it's based upon a foot. And then it's, yeah, there's a few prime numbers, so to speak, and then they used a standard foot, and they used a standard pound also. They were derived from, all the derivations that get into all the details are derived from old systems or just old household items, or your foot being a literal foot, and you know, there's some logic behind it. The logic's not in terms of, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, though. It's not it's not a pure mathematical system, but it's pure in the sense that it was derived from real things, I suppose.
Well, I'm just kind of don't these things like pull people apart? Like, I don't know. There's different communication systems, even between cultures that speak the exact same language, aren't there? You know, certain phrases mean certain things. There's a whole bunch of street talk and local lingo. You know, in New Zealand, everybody says "sweet bro." All right, and apparently, some people don't understand what "sweet" means. And in the New Zealand context, sweet just means, oh, that's cool, that's good, you know? Oh, that's
sweet.
I thought
it'd be universal.
Yeah.
You know how you can get someone getting mad at some tourist who's over here, right? And tourists might be from Asia, they could be from Africa, they could be from anywhere. And there are some universally understood words that aren't there, Vinny. I think it comes across in the emotion they're portrayed into. It's like when someone says the F word to someone, you know? Regardless of where they're from, they know they're angry. It's kind of funny, isn't it?
Yeah, the fundamentals are there. And what I find interesting is a lot of cultures are drawn apart by the little differences. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's virtually nothing, really, we've really got to disagree about. We all need food, shelter, water, and a happy life. You know,
I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about this last night over dinner, actually. I was thinking to myself, you know, a lot of the reason why these debates don't move on is because all these walls people have up. A lot of the reasons why a lot of the truths we're talking about aren't exposed is because of all the kind of tribalism and culturalism. But then I'm against tribalism on some levels, but then I'm also for it because I want people to have their own cultures and their own heritage and all those memories and languages and things intact. But at the same time, it seems a lot of people who focus on those things purely, all they're doing is reveling in their ancestors' shadow and not really making history themselves. And I see whole communities and whole cultures doing that, and I find it really disturbing that they're having to kind of, it's kind of being like living in false reality too. It's kind of like playing video games your whole life. It's just engaging in something that happened, you know, a few hundred years ago or something, a few thousand years ago. And that's it. There's no kind of real world overlay, neo overlay conversion of it sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's like everything, though. It's pros and cons.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We're taught to see those two things, pros and cons, but I think we should be looking for more. You know, there's got to be a new way of doing things that nobody's really put into practice yet. All right, I'm thinking all the old ways. It's they've got
looking to reinvent the wheel, Vinny.
Well. Everything that exists, right, is perfect in whatever it does, you know, by its own design. So if we wanted a new system, the only thing that would need to be done is to incorporate all the different best aspects of the world's cultures and mannerisms, societies and stuff like that, and just, you know,
now you're describing the new world order, Vinny.
It's the same thing, is it?
Well, yeah, they want to say, hey, everyone worships the same God. A lot of people have fallen for that propaganda. And we need to all, you know, they just want to form a huge, big melting pot, Vinny, because although there's a lot of good reasons why it would be nice, they want to use the good, as they always do, to just get more people under their power, under their control, and have it be more efficient.
I would think that getting rid of the corruption that rules us all first would be the only way that any kind of free society could flourish. And if it could survive in peace with infinite complexity, so be it, as long as there's no corrupt scumbags steering the course of nations. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. We'll be right back.
Through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show, hour number two. It's 8:01 a.m., October the 29th, Friday, local New Zealand time, broadcasting live from the future. Oh, yeah. Now, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. We talked about this yesterday, but I wanted to bring it up again because it's just so... extreme to see in South Florida, and this happened a while back, you know, granted, there was a anti-racist protest, all right, by this socialist group on the street with their signs, megaphone, going stop racism, stop racism, and a Tea Party member walks by. And then before you know it, he's being chased by these people who look like gangbangers with signs who start beating him over the head with the signs, going, stop racism, as they beat him over the head.
Yeah, there's some, like, big insane-looking guy in a singlet. And he gets dealt to by one of the right winger Tea Party boys. Good on him. And then this other Tea Party guy has been chased. That's a smaller looking fella. He then pulls something out of his pocket, which looks to me like one of those nunchucks, like a handle and another thing on the end. And he starts whacking the Obama boy across the legs with them. And then, before being chased and then mauled by about, you know, four or five of these Barack H. Obama supporters, including one crazy guy kind of runs over this kind of chubbyish guy. Comes running over in this, I don't know how to describe it, you guys can see it, and with his sign, and starts, you know, swinging it like overhand, whacking this guy over the head with it. Insane. Loving leftists. So loving.
It's just, when you devote yourself to an idea, to the point where you'll kill for it, I think that the idea is probably a bad one. If you devote yourself to an idea where you feel that it might be worth dying for, that may not be so bad. Mm-hmm. I don't think that taking other people's lives advances any cause. I think it only corrupts it.
No, I mean, over-offensive violent actions should have nothing to do with political activism.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. And this is the problem when people can't have debates like and discussions like we're doing here, Vinny. When people can't have those discussions and when it breaks down, when they don't even engage in them to start with, you're going to get violence.
Let's have some peace and some unity and some harmony once in a freaking while. All you're going to do is rub two goddang brain cells together. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show with Will at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
I take my anger to a place that ain't gonna get up in your face. The facts we okay, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Dino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you rather stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to a planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery.
They oh yeah!
To you. They charge interest on the loan but don't print the interest. So there'll never be enough money to pay off all the debt. What do you get? Crash and burn.
We've been looking at some videos of late about violence against Tea Party members, and gives us thoughts about violence towards protesting and aggressive confrontations in politics. And think to yourself, you know what, that's not the place for politics, that's the place for war, okay? If politics fails, then you get violent. If somebody won't negotiate with you, if somebody won't stop trying to kill your people,
I think aggressive speech is okay.
Yeah, aggressive speech is okay, but
as you know,
yeah.
But, yeah, no, using actual violence, you know, no way, because then it just descends from there, right? Then no progress and no side wins.
Because you're not focused. You're not focused on resolving the issue. You're just focused on messing up your opponent. You know, and so that means you're not getting anywhere. The only thing you're doing is pouring resources into stopping anyone from getting anywhere.
And then when you're messing with an opponent in today's world and there's technology and stuff, even when you don't involve governments, it's going to lead to an arms race.
Especially if you have a creative opponent, and then they'll come up with a new way to mess with you, and you'll have to come up with a new way to mess with them. And you come up with all these amazing discoveries, you know?
One guy gets a stick, one guy gets a machete, one guy gets a gun, one guy gets a rocket launcher. You know, like, it just keeps going up. Who benefits? Well, the bank in the end of the day, because someone's going to take a loan out to get you know, more explosives or something, and they're going to have to get, you know, some big hefty loan from a nice central bank. So the bankers always benefit from these things.
Yeah, yeah. I was having a conversation with a guy from Yugoslavia and about the Kosovo war and stuff like that. And I say, oh, well, yeah, you know, it's what the bankers love. And he's like, yeah, I don't think any bankers had anything to do with it, man, you know. And I was just like, really? Where did Slobodan Milosevic get all his money for his army? So I don't know. It's just like, bankers, you can't afford that kind of stuff. You've got to borrow. And the only people with that kind of money that you can borrow from are international bankers, all right? Anybody who wages war on anybody.
The banks have got to do everything to do with everything, just about.
Yeah, you know, it's impossible.
And insurance companies.
Yeah. All of which
are run by the banks anyway.
Yeah. You know, I mean, come on. It's all leading back to the same source over and over and over again. Okay, if you go into a bathroom and it smells funky, you deduce that there must be something awry. So therefore, same principle applied to the economy. If every single time somebody's benefiting and everybody else getting screwed over, why don't you point the finger at the people responsible, the people at the very tip top of the capstone of this great big pyramid we call the New World Order? Fantastic. Let's just channel Lucifer's energy, shall we? Let's work as slaves. Oh, yes, Master. Oh, Master. Please. Please whip me more. I haven't been taxed enough this year. Please increase the Master. You know? Everybody's turning into these sniveling, wanting to serve evil, tripe pieces of filth. You know? I'm very, very weary of it. And it's a tragedy. It truly is. Because I don't want to associate with trash and scum and filth. Which is unfortunate. Because the vast majority of my friends, you know, friends of friends, and you know, just in general, the vast majority of society fall into those categories, you know. And it's just like, oh my goodness, it's so pervasive, and these people.
No, it's one of those things that's really hard to define. You know, that they're good people and they're scum all at the same time. You know, all of us can be scum. You know, there's the potential's always there, right? It's kind
but
of.
Aren't we getting those... judgmental, Will? Aren't we getting judgmental making something up? You know, a reason to not like somebody, you know, for their political views or things like that. I mean, people who attack us as conspiracy theorists, for example, could we be friends with somebody who labels us as conspiracy theorists?
To be honest, I kind of have to be because just about everyone does. Even the people who are friends with you who are trying to relate to you still say conspiracy theories because, look, the CIA stuck it in everyone's heads after they killed JFK. You know, they popularized that term and they have coined it to such an extent that the media use it. I've noticed the media using it around this Australian trade unionist guy, who Kevin Bracken, who came out and said 9/11 was an inside job on ABC Radio. And I've noticed the Sydney Morning Herald run an article saying, you know, Kevin Bracken criticised for his 9/11 conspiracy. So it's not his theory to start with. I hate people saying that. They always go, oh, you and your theories. As if I just come up with this whole grandeur, New World Order idea all by myself.
And yeah, so I'm the bloody mastermind here. I came up with the whole scenario.
So the Sydney Morning Herald does two things wrong. They say for his 9/11 conspiracy, and then they've got other people quoted in there saying, I don't think 9/11 was a conspiracy, like Mr. Bracken. What do you mean? Of course it was a conspiracy. You know, so straight away,
either
they don't
way.
Understand the English language term that if it was done by 19 Arabs, it was a conspiracy of 19 Arabs. You know, like, if you really believe that. I tend to think that 19 Arabs I'm not being racist here, aren't as capable as the entire, you know, inorganic structure that is the US government. Like, it's just unbelievable to me that some people would think, no, that argument's got more weight over ours straight off the bat. Straight off the bat. And it shows how well propaganda works. And that's what I mean. So, yeah, I've got friends who say, oh, conspiracy theorists, whatever. Yeah, and I give them stick back. And then they know not to go there again. Well, they can, but, you know, I give them stick back or I ignore them. Or, you know, there's ways of dealing with people. But we can still be friends, you know. We can still, you know, sit back and you know, have the odd beer or something and watch a movie. And you can still be friends with a lot of people because most people are good. And most people are good-willed. They've just had their will broken. And they just, every day, they're just having their head pounded in by a system they don't understand. And you know what? It leads to all these false interpretations.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's when you're confronted by a system that you don't understand, you get resigned to misunderstanding, and you think to yourself that misunderstanding is a way of coping. And it's like, well, maybe it's not actually a way of coping. Maybe it's a way of escaping, right? Trying to escape reality by choosing to not understand it, by choosing to not do the research, by choosing to be a slave, by choosing to go to work each day. It's a terrible day in the human history when people simply don't care about the world or the people around them.
And then people will just take one little thing we say and they'll go, oh, you're against people go working, and they'll misinterpret it. See, all these things are complex matters, you know. I'm not against people working. I'm against people being slaves. There's a difference between earning an honest wage, people getting paid for the value of their work, for the value of their skills and their knowledge set, and people being run roughshod over by big foreign banks. There's a big difference. There's a big difference. And the fact that they devalue our currency tenfold, and you think what that could do for all the real groups and all the real people out there who need wealth over and above these huge corporate whores, right? I mean, when you think about the inequality just there, this is something that needs to be talked about. No one is. No one can. No one will. They say, oh, look, we expand the money supply so that everyone can have money. It wouldn't work otherwise, William. What are you talking about? This isn't the 1800s. Of course we need to print more money than exists. They use these fake excuses. Like, it wouldn't matter if everyone just had one penny. If that one penny had worth, it doesn't matter what it's physically represented as long as it has some backing, as long as it has some worth. They've got everyone deluded into thinking, oh, if you've got more dollars in your wallet, you're wealthier. If you've got 800, if your $1,000 is turned into a million rupees, everyone's better off. And because people are so illiterate and don't understand, oh, inflation, real buying power, you know, false economy, They buy it. And they just go, what's your problem, man? You know, I've got plenty of hot dogs and I've got plenty of, you know, rugby tickets. And I've got, what's your problem?
Why?
So look, as far as I can say, they need to keep out the debate. Just keep out of my way and it'll be all right.
Hey, and that's another thing that I've been thinking about lately. You know, just telling people just to be quiet, you know, and just being like, I've heard everything that you've said already, and I presume I'll hear everything that I've already heard before if you keep talking. So just be quiet and let me explain a few things to you. 9/11 was an inside job. The health industry, the government, the banking industry, drug running, are all run by the exact same group of people who play them off against each other so that each group can incrementally take more and more control over their areas of operation. Okay? It's quite simple. It's a systemic methodology. You don't need to corrupt everybody in an entire office building in order to have control over that office building. You just buy the office building, don't you?
Oh, yeah, and that way you keep under the radar, too. This is so.
You don't even have to come to work in order to make sure that everything is going exactly as you want it to.
That's why little people like us cop the flak, and David Rockefeller, except for the truth movement, largely goes untouched. There's no commie groups that go and attack David Rockefeller, you know, verbally or otherwise. There's no any of it.
That's because people who talk about all the poor people being oppressed from
commie groups, they don't go after Rockefeller.
Yeah, 9/11 truth people have got gall. They have bravery. They understand the significance of confronting David Rockefeller. These other people who are focused on pathetic, minuscule side issues have no idea the significance of the life that they lead. They don't realize that any human being could potentially be a Nelson Mandela or an Einstein. Okay? If only we weren't trained, basically.
Part of the Brotherhood.
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, yeah. But if only we weren't trained from birth to be thinkers of a tiny minority, using very, very little of our thinking capacity in daily life, we could be a hell of a lot more effective about whatever we wish to do. Whether it was painting or rebuilding your car or fighting the New World Order. And I think that everybody in every day in life, you know, just like the green climate cultists say, you know, every dollar you spend is about a statement against climate change. Well, I say that every dollar you spend is a statement against the New World Order that you can make. If you go to a New World Order Macca's instead of your local kebab shop, as I have down the road, you're supporting the New World Order. So go to that local kebab shop and you realize that those kebabs taste pretty damn good by comparison anyway, and you get far more value for your money, and that money actually goes into the local economy instead of being shipped offshore, or worse yet, instead of offshore into eugenics programs, as is the case with Microsoft, and I'm sure probably is the case with Apple too. You know, it's almost as if every single huge corporation or entity in this world is influenced in some way by these filthy scum we like to call the New World Order. You know, it's unavoidable. Therefore, it must be confronted in every single aspect of your life because it has an influence over every single aspect of your life. This is why I find it ironic when people say that politics is just not something that they're interested in, because politics does affect every single aspect of your life in every conceivable way, and you're simply unaware of it if you don't think that it's interesting. To say that politics is not interesting is to say that your life is boring.
Even when they debate stupid things like American Idol, that's politics. They don't know what politics even means. Politics is discourse. Politics is debate. Politics is progress. Politics is, you know, they just think politics, if you look at people's online profiles that they fill out about themselves on Facebook or whatever, if you look in politics, they'll say, National, Labour, John Key, Barack Obama, Tony Blair. That's not answering the question. Answer the question, you slave. I mean, seriously.
Well, they've never had any real thought on the subject is the thing. A lot of people go through in their entire lives without engaging in any real thought about anything.
The most common one in New Zealand is politics, liberal. Because, what does liberal mean? Try and get them to explain it. Try getting to explain that. Oh, it's liberal because, you know, it's just, easygoing. I don't have really any hard feelings about anything. And people with strong opinions and that are just real weirdos. And they're hard to get along with. And I don't like them. And, we just all need to be liberal and love each other. And, you know, really, and Barack Obama wants to end the wars. And, yeah.
Hey, I was wondering, is it a matter of opinion or is it a matter of fact? I like it when people try to muddy it, you know, and just say, oh, Vinny, that's just your opinion that the Federal Reserve is a private organization. You go, really? I bet you $5,000 if we go to a computer and go to the Federal Reserve website, and if we go to bloody white pages, we'll find it listed as a corporation. You know? Yeah. These people don't understand what a definition is.
They won't take you up on the bets either. If people took me up on the bets, I'd be a millionaire right now.
But shockingly, large amounts of cash can flow forth to you by foolish people who think that they can make a gamble on what the truth is when they're just a dumbass climate cultist, fluoride head, slave mongering, slave block living, clubbing fluoride, swilling scum. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Want? What kind of world do you want to see? Welcome back to the world bending, not to be confused with the air bending, Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. If you'd like to give any feedback on this show, and one thing I've been wanting to have is some negative feedback. We haven't received any. To my great surprise, no email feedback to producer at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com feedback anyway. It's producer at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Particularly if you disagree with us, particularly if you want to come on air and debate anything with us. Because I think it's important for people to be represented, particularly through media. Which is why 2 years ago I started going out with a camera and filming activists in the New Zealand community protesting and giving public addresses and speeches and going to political meetings and stuff like that and making videos for them to put on YouTube so that their voice can be heard. Because nobody else bothers to do it. And I found that very sad. About my country is that I'm basically the only one, you know. Well, at least doing specifically what I'm going on about, trying to help everybody kind of have a little bit of representation, but a media coverage that they deserve, or at least deserve more so than the vacuous and pointless issues that mainstream media goes on about. Doesn't really matter what they say anymore. I mean, you can switch the television off and you'll be just as smart tomorrow as you are today. You won't miss a thing. And it's quite a liberating feeling when you realize that all this vacuous tripe that everyone's got themselves all on a kerfuffle over doesn't actually mean anything, has no real value. Not like, I don't know, becoming a little bit more informed about a particular subject by watching, say, a documentary.
Makes people's lives, though, Vinny. That's the thing, man. All this vacuous stuff, all this Coro Street stuff, it makes people's lives, because once you can convince people that life is pointless, there's no meaning, there's no explanation, there's no nothing, instead of looking a bit more and delving into the wild and wonderful aspects of life, they go, oh, that's it, right? The establishment's told me that. To be sensible, I've got to understand that's all there is. All there is to life is what my five senses tell me in my current situation here. most of these people even ignore their five senses. You know, when police drones are flying around, I can't hear that, and when government attacks them, I can't see that. So then now they're almost ignoring the five senses. Even now, that's getting towards a perception is reality world. So first, it's reality is reality, and reality is beyond our five senses. Then it's five sense world. Now it's perception world only.
One step, and I two step, three step.
Hate perception as reality people. Hate them. Because like they just believe that if you lock yourself up in your house and you surround yourself, or not even lock yourself up in your house, but just surround yourself in your life with things that you only want to perceive and you only want to like and you only want to do, except for working that slave job for the government, of course, but they convince themselves they like that too, you see? You see, it's all about, if I'm positive about being a slave, positive things will happen for me, and I'll move up the company ranks until I realize they're all run by a bunch of pedophile psychopaths, and I'll move up in the world, and I'll get a nice house in the area of town they've decided is the fancy part until they liquidate that, and that becomes a new ghetto.
Slave block.
Yeah. And it's just like their vacuous existence is maintained by their nihilist viewpoints on life. The point is there is no point. Don't you understand? The point to life is there is no point. Therefore, I'm just going to go and get drunk and visit prostitutes and shoot some people if I want and work as a slave in the meantime because that pays for me to go and get prostitutes and get drunk and get drugs. I'm just, look, man, there's no judgment. There's no nothing. You just do what you have to do.
Yeah, no responsibility. And this has actually been talking, I've heard this at least three or four times in the last couple of days on talk radio in New Zealand, which is rare. Nobody is taking any responsibility anymore. Nobody, right? Even us, well, I'm sure we're not taking full responsibility for our actions and for our lives, are we? It's almost as if taking full responsibility has become taboo now. What the hell has happened?
You can't take full responsibility. You can't. I mean, I'm still being messed around by an insurance company at the moment. You know, you should have heard. You know how enraged I can get. You should have heard some of the calls I gave to this company. After being mucked around for 2 months, I gave them 2 months. I gave them more than the legal contract time of 28 days. Then I called up and said, you better get your asses into gear. I'm taking you to fair go, and I'm going to take you to court as well. You need to do your job properly. And I unleashed a bit on them. I didn't swear at them. I didn't threaten them. But you know what? Like I feel like falling down sometimes. You've seen that movie, Falling Down?
Yeah, yeah.
I love that movie because that's as close as I can get to doing what I want to do sometimes. It's just like, you know, man, these guys just push you. And if you're the sort of person who doesn't believe in big government, doesn't believe in big corporations, it's just like, I want to unleash on these guys.
It's
they
like
are
an insane
scum, and they're getting in my way. And it's just like, just keep out of my way, scum. And and there's no problems. But you start affecting the way my life is running, and you got problems. I'm going to absolutely ruin you before you ruin my life. That's the only way you can take responsibility for yourself, though. You can't. They're literally taking them away to the point where even if you want the responsibilities, you can't get them anymore. No, the government decided the right's good. Shut up and drink it. No, the government says MSG is fine in the supermarket and we can give your kids aspartame too. You have no say on the matter. Shut up and eat it.
And we can change the warning labels and all the content provisos on all the packaging. So now we can sell you canola oil and call it olive oil, as long as there's 1% olive oil in it.
You know, if there's two movies people need to watch in that sort of hemisphere of things that aren't truth movies, that is just fun. It's Falling Down with Michael Douglas, which has been described as Glenn Beck's wet dream. Not that I'm a Glenn Beck fan, but, you know, you can see what they're getting at there. And Office Space. I forget the actors in Office Space, but Office Space is great, guys. Office Space needs to be watched and needs to be repeated.
Office Space was Ron Livingston. He was Peter. And it was, in fact, a based on a short animated series by Mike Judge, the creator of Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill.
That's right. That's right. See if anyone knows the stuff. But, yeah, Office Space needs to be watched. It's just so brilliant. How this guy rebels against his own company and turns this consultancy who is there to review the company against his own boss and kind of turns everything on its head and goes from slave to CEO. Almost, you know. Whilst carrying out an elaborate scam on that company in the same way they do on us. Zeros and ones, folks.
It's all about fractions and decimal places.
But if you're the Federal Reserve, you don't steal fractions. You just, multiply it by 10, boys, yeah. 25, sure.
Well, you know, they used to have a limit on fractional reserve to 10, but they've removed that limit now, so now it's infinite.
The credit companies couldn't operate without it, and I'm a pragmatist, and so practically speaking, they needed, that amendment. So,
What buildings did they blow up in Fight Club? Credit card companies.
Yeah, and then it had to crash and burn on two towers too. Yeah, yeah, and that's a bit of predictive programming, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, that movie is a mental rearrangement even for a slave. But then if you watch it as a truther, you can see there's a whole bunch more to it too. That movie is full of good propaganda, you could say white and black propaganda.
Yeah, for real, bro. It's that was a life changer, that movie, for me, seriously. Yeah, just like The Matrix was.
Yeah, and then same for me, The Matrix in 99, I watched that and was like, okay, yeah. Sort of probably helped shape some of my views. Not entirely. But and then you watch it again, like I watch it these days, and it's like, whoa, this is full of... people think it's exposing the enemy. That's fully the enemy symbology. Absolutely jam-packed. In fact, quite a few Keanu Reeves films are.
Well, I'd say that, well, in my experience, it's most Hollywood films. Most Hollywood films. Mm-hmm. Big action blockbusters in particular. Some more than others, but most of them have at least a little bit, if not a hell of a lot. And it's freaky, you know. And I'm wondering how much of it is on purpose, and how much of it is just people just absorbing and then redoing. But
that's the whole semantics thing. You'll never know.
But it's semantics. The fact of the matter that it goes on in the first place. That's the point that needs exploring. Not the extent of it. The fact that it is happening itself is alarming enough to put into action some kind of response to stop it.
Like you said, Vinny. Like you said, it's semantics. And so whenever I find myself trying to explain, how the Federal Reserve does what they do, how the global elite do what they do through the media and governments, people say to me, oh, they, who's they? When we just use the term they as if that's a crime. And they always want to know who's they. The truth is, most people, possibly include myself here, most people aren't ready to know who they is. Especially when you get to the ultimate they. And so it doesn't really matter to them. I say to these people, so are you going to know, do you know who the Order of Death are, or who the 33rd Degree are, or who the Knights of Malta are, or who the Jesuit Order are, or who Ignatius Loyola is? And do you know any of these people anyway? Why should I tell you who they is? Do you know difference between common law and canon law? Do you know who Adam Weishaupt was? Do you know? So it doesn't matter. So you say that and you lose them anyway. But they think they want to know who they is. They think they is going to be like some politician they've heard of in front of Women's Weekly magazine. That's how stupid they are. That's how ridiculous. That's how much of a joke they think the architecture of this planet really is. It's not a joke. They're the joke. And when information doesn't make sense to you, you should look at yourself and then go to fill in the gaps of your worldview. You shouldn't just say, oh, well, the world's a messed up place. I'm going to continue thinking it's just messed up and that's it. Like how Noam Chomsky views 9/11. Oh, they couldn't have done it. And they wouldn't be organized enough. That's it. I talk about how America's corrupt all day. I'm an American-hating leftist. But they couldn't do that. Oh, really? Because they think everyone idiotic, just like them. Yeah, you talk about Hitler's 21 staged events at the Polish border. Oh, yeah, that happened back then, you know.
Same stuff over and over and over again. Welcome to the New World Order. They have a game plan and they stick to it. They've used the same methodologies for hundreds of years. That's how they've remained in power. In order to have any organization that doesn't implode in on itself, you need to ensure that variation is kept to a minimum. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving,
it's worth saving,
then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Or the times they are a-changing.
Oh yeah, the times they are a-friggin' changing. Speaking of times are changing, our new time slot, just to reiterate here, apparently repetition, according to the CIA, is one of the most effective forms of brainwashing. The Vinnie Eastwood Show will be changing time slots the week after next till 5 to 7 p.m. Central. So when you're driving home from work in Austin, you'll certainly be having a wee bit of a cackle when you're stuck in the ridiculous amounts of pickup truck traffic. And in New Zealand, at 12 till 2 p.m. local time, while you're in your cafes, respectively, drinking your GMO coffee. I don't paint such a bright picture of the world, don't I, Will? You know, it's a celebration of life here at the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. So a nice little final segment here. And I kind of wanted to get into how important it is to know what you really want to do with your life. A lot of people, they live their lives according to how they were brought up. You know, my father's a farmer, therefore I have to be a father. I mean, a farmer, yeah. And I was kind of thinking to myself, well, do we really choose our own path really anymore? Or is it all kind of pre-picked for us? Like, we're given false choices. Can we really create our own space, you know?
When you talk about people farming stuff and doing generational things like that, I don't see that as too bad. I think that's, you know, to be a relativist here, it's always happened. But yeah, that's always gone on. And skills passed down generation to generation, you know, blacksmiths and goldsmiths and, you know, stonemasons and, you know, that's always, that fraternity's always been a father-son thing, you know, generational thing. And there are good reasons for that, loyalty being one of them. And ease of knowledge being handed down the other, because you're living with someone, growing up with someone, and you're being shown the world by someone. And I would rather that than the government taking the place of parents and taking the place of families and culture, like they are currently, And, you know, smart people go, oh, well, I've got to go to law school because I can get in with that GPA and I can make a lot of money on the other side of this. And so it's really kind of sad that the you know, government has taken over culture. You know, they pay for a lot of the movies, video games, they, you know, and obviously decide what goes in them a lot of the time. And it's not even government. There's just higher forces behind them even. It's really, really scary. The culture has been hijacked. And this has always gone on, but it's just a matter of degrees. Once again, it's all, you know, it's gone from the first degree to the 30-something degree, and now it's getting, now it's starting to heat up. I mean, we're just all meant to be fully initiated into their death cult, and that's how we get along, and that's how we socialize with the rest of the human population. That's how they want it. And then the few weirdos who don't like it, well, we get, at best, and like in Brave New World, pushed out beyond the city's boundaries into reservations or killed.
Like on Happy... Like on Happy Climate Fool's Day. This in from the Daily Telegraph. Today is Climate Fool's Day. To celebrate, here is an essay courtesy of Simon Barnett to show you how money is being squandered by the Coalition on Climate Change. 2008 Climate Change Act commits Britain to cutting its CO2 emissions by 80% by 2050 at a cost... 80% of the population probably by 2050 at a cost of $18.3 billion every year for the next four decades, according to the Department of Energy and Climate Change website. This is being funded by top slicing the cash from your energy bills. The figure does not include other costs such as the losses incurred due to the economic damage and opportunity costs of these measures. And obviously the
so Vinny, can I just say this?
Seeks to address CO2 emissions from the UK.
Can I just say this, you know, currently emissions are increasing because population is increasing. If they want to reduce emissions by 80%, they're either going to have to kill off about 80% of people or the technologies are going to have to improve vastly. But how could they predict that happening by 2050? Are they soothsayers? You know, how could they predict that the technology is suddenly going to, how would they know, you know, what, how much CO2 the average vehicle, even know what a vehicle is going to look like in 2050? And so it's insane. Those projections are based upon killing people. They're the only things they can project. It's my case anyway, against these climate cultists.
Yeah. I suppose we probably offend a lot of people on this show, but we probably offend the kind of people who deserve it, you know. You know, because I think the truth really does offend people quite a bit. I mean,
we don't make videos blowing them up. We don't make videos with their heads being splattered across walls like they've done to climate deniers.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, we're just calling a shovel a spade here. I mean, seriously, you can't take things too personally these days, really, can you, Will? Because there's so many people out there who don't actually personally believe the things that they say that they think. They don't even think for themselves, so how could they have an original opinion that they truly mean?
It's almost as if they should realize they're full of crap and stop doing it. Stop it, Simon. Stop being that way.
Yeah. And thank you very much to Danny Romero and everybody. Drink fresh water, stop drinking aspartame, and stop taking big pharma drugs. And we'll be back with more amazing guests. And thanks very much to the network for supporting this show, without which it would not be possible. And we'll see you tomorrow.